Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are likely to trigger the extreme fanboys and fangirls who disagree with them. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome everybody to another edition of Hot Takes with Billy Biz. I am your host, Billy Business, and my guest today is Billy Business. That's right, I'm flying solo today, and no, I'm not talking about a Star Wars story, although I really do like that movie, and that will be an episode coming up. You don't have to wait too long for that one, I don't think, but that's not what we're talking about today. Today we're talking about 1998's Lost in Space. That's right, the one with William Hurt, Mimi Rogers, Heather Graham, Lacey Chabert, Joey himself, Matt LeBlanc, and a scene-stealing performance by Mr. Gary Oldman. We're going to break down this entire movie that I actually really like. I really like Lost in Space. I am that one person that thinks it's actually pretty good. But before I get into the episode, I do want to call out a couple things. Now, I usually don't do this, at least at the top of the show, but I got a lot of exciting things coming up. First and foremost, I will be along with, as part of, I should say, Screen Junkies and Fandom, I will be at New York Comic Con coming up on October 5th. That, I believe, is next Saturday. Holy cow, that is coming out quick. So if you're coming out to New York Comic Con, definitely try to find me and say hi, because I love meeting you guys. But also, come to the Fandom Screen Junkies panel. We will be debuting our documentary for Galaxy Quest, which I know they've been talking about for a long time. It's finally ready to show you guys. We're going to show the whole thing at the panel. Also, after that, the next week, October... Let's see if that's 5 plus 7, carry the 1. October 11th, 12th, 13th is LA Comic Con. And I'm doing something on my own there that I'm really excited about. You may have heard it if you guys are fans of the Nerd Goat podcast with Mr. Ed Greer, Ron Swallow, and producer Bill. Those guys and myself, Billy Biz, we are teaming up for a limited series where we're going to take our minds and we are going to try to figure out the best way to reboot some of your favorite IPs. The one we are going to be doing live at Comic-Con, at LA Comic-Con, is going to be Batman, which, if anyone knows Ed Greer, that is going to get controversial. It's going to get heated, but I'm really excited to be working with those guys, to be doing something together. Who knows where this is going to lead, but for right now, it's just a really cool miniseries. And if you are in the SoCal area and you want to experience it live, we will be there on Sunday. I believe that's October 13th, whatever the Sunday is of LA Comic Con, coming out and see us. We're doing the show called Reboot It. And the first episode is Batman. We are doing it live at LA Comic Con. Very excited about that. All right. I think I've shilled for myself enough. Let's get into today's episode talking about 1998's Lost in Space. Now, this movie, when it came out, you have to remember the context of when this came out. When this movie came out, it was the number one movie. It was the first number one movie of 1998 that was not Titanic. Titanic came out in December of 1997. This came out in April of 1993, which means it was April 3rd. Scott Mans would be disappointed that I don't know that off the top of my head. April 3rd, 1998. That means that Titanic had the number one spot all the way up until this movie comes out. A lot of people nicknamed this movie The Iceberg because it was the first movie that booted Titanic out. So this was kind of like everyone was talking about this movie. What was going to be the first movie that dethroned Titanic from being number one at the top of the box office? Well, it was Lost in Space, which it's going to go down in history, like it or not. And a lot of critics did not. Roger Ebert at the time gave it 1.5 out of 4. I wonder, why not just go 1 or 2? Why 1.5? What did you think was like, it's not so bad that it deserves, that it only deserves 1, but I can't in good conscience give it 2 stars. this just was not a very well liked movie by critics. And of course, time has not been kind to this. Audiences have not been kind to this. I'm trying to, if you hear me clinking and clacking, I'm trying to figure out what the Rotten Tomatoes score is. Again, because I'm a very prepared host here by myself. If you want to know why I don't have a co-host or a guest, I should say, today, not a lot of people want to rewatch this movie, and I really want to talk about it. Here we go. 28% for critic score and 24% for audience score. So this is one of those rare times that they were aligned on the same kind of wavelength with this movie. I remember this movie. I remember it was the Mask of Zorro VHS. And on the VHS, there was, or maybe it was the Phantom. It's either the Phantom. No, it must have been Mask of Zorro, because that would have been 1997, and that would have been a preview for the next year. So yeah, it was Mask of Zorro. I think Phantom had a preview of Mask of Zorro. You could do a whole Kevin Bacon 6 Degrees with where these trailers come from, but I remember seeing the trailer, or at least the teaser, on one of these VHS movies. I'm pretty sure it was Mask of Zorro. And it was such a cool trailer. I think they really played up kind of the tension. I remember it started kind of, you know, all in space, and then it goes to pitch black, and then it's, you know, Dad, where are we? Which I don't even think it was that kid who's actually Will in the movie. I don't even think it's his voice. I think it was just like a random child actor that did it. But then they showed all these really intense moments. And I think the moment that everybody kind of remembers from this movie, even if you don't like it or haven't seen it forever, is that shot of Matt LeBlanc where he's, you know, about to shoot this kind of space rifle, and this like Iron Man type mask comes from behind his neck and swoops down over his face. And I just thought, wow, this movie looks so cool. I had no idea that it was based on any sort of TV show. I think after this came out, they may have started putting Lost in Space on either like Nick at Night or the Sci-Fi Channel, something like that. But I remember being super, super into it and like really looking forward to this like crazy space movie at the time, having no idea that it was like based off any sort of IP. So come around to, you know, March, April of 1998, by that point, you know, Titanic fever had taken over. It just won like every award that it could win, and it was still just number one. And I was, you know, look, to be fair, I was in what, sixth grade at this point, maybe fifth or sixth grade. I was in sixth grade. I was burnt out of Titanic. I didn't want to hear the song anymore. And I kind of think like this is where some of the backlash for Titanic comes from, is not that it's not a good movie. I kind of think you're crazy, or you at least don't have a leg to stand on if you're really going to sit there and say that Titanic is not like a well-made movie. Like, come on. Maybe it's not for you, but you can't say it's not a well-made movie. But it was just everywhere. It was every magazine cover. It was every time you turn on the radio was the Celine Dion song. It was, you know, anytime you go to the movies, it was just, you know, most of the screens were still playing Titanic. So when Lost in Space came around, like, I was ready for this. I remember going to see it with it was very weird. My dad and my Uncle Jim, who I think I saw like every 3 or 4 years at that point, like very rarely, but whenever we did, we'd always go see a movie, and Lost in Space was it. And the whole time I was incredibly captivated. I remember this, like, I remember that opening space battle. It's like, wow, they're in these ships that kind of look like B-Wings from Return of the Jedi, but they have like these really cool, like, swivel bubbles. And I really liked the co-pilot's name, or the other pilot's name, who's, I can't remember what his character's name is, but the one that's like, this cold war just got hot. Like, his voice, I think his name was Jeb. It was Lenny James, and he has such an incredible voice. I just loved that character. But what a way to start the movie. And I just remember, like, and it's the guy who plays Morgan, Lenny James. Yeah, that whole sequence of them in space. I was captivated by it. And so as the story progressed and, you know, you find out this is kind of about time travel and everything, I was into it. I bought all the toys. I think I was the only one. I had the little Jupiter 2 that you could put Major Don West, maybe the only time Matt LeBlanc has ever been an action figure. Someone can fact check me on that. I just can't think of what franchise he would have been in that would warrant an action figure. If you've been listening to the show, you have to realize I have a bin of action figures from like weird, terrible movies. That's like, really? Like, I have a Lamont Cranston from The Shadow. I have a Artemis Gordon and Jim West from Wild Wild West. And of course I have all the Robinson family from this movie somewhere. And my mom's house in Fresno. I loved this movie, and it wasn't until later on, maybe like when I was in like junior high or high school, maybe it wasn't until years later that I found out like people hate this movie, not just like dislike it. They hate it. This is a funny story. So I used to do a podcast called Movies on Trial. Think of it as Hot Takes with Billy Business mixed with movie fights. Me and my friend Chris Edwards, really hilarious and razor sharp, smart comedian. In fact, he was the one that introduced me to Ed Greer, who I will be doing a podcast live with at LA Comic Con. We used to do this podcast, Movies on Trial, and it was, we would take a movie and one of us would quote unquote prosecute the movie for being bad and the other had to defend it. And I remember, I was like, let's do Lost in Space. And he said, I don't know, man. I really don't want to have to watch it again. It's like, come on, man. It'll be fun. So we watched Lost in Space. About halfway through the movie, he's just kind of like standing and, you know, just trying to keep the blood pumping because he was just like falling asleep. So he goes in the kitchen, he gets something to drink, and then he's just like, this is so dumb. And he collapsed on the floor. And I just was like, come on, man, you're being super melodramatic. I had no idea that he had like a medical condition where he just like would spontaneously at times just like pass out. And so we joked that Lost in Space was the movie that actually killed him. He literally almost died of boredom watching it. That was just a fun little aside about Lost in Space. Let me talk about the things that I really do like about this movie. First and foremost, I think that this was a role that Matt LeBlanc was born to play as Major Don West. I think that he proved he was such a charismatic, badass leading man. And it's so funny to me that, you know, like when you watch Friends and Joey is just kind of like the lovable goofball, and it's just so polar opposite in this movie that, you know, the first few minutes, it's almost like you have to adjust for a second, but I really think like you forget about Joey Tribbiani and you're in there with Don West. And I'm kind of shocked that he didn't have a bigger career after this as a leading man in films. And I think a lot of people point to Lost in Space as the movie that kind of killed the chances of that happening. I don't think so. I think a little monkey playing baseball may have had something more to do with it than this. But I thought he was great in this. William Hurt. I mean, is William Hurt ever in a movie where he's bad? I mean, he's been in bad movies, but he's never bad. And I think he's so believable as this dad and the captain of the ship. And I just love him. So he's one of like the most underrated like movie dads. I think he's a great dad. And just kind of like that whole, you know, story of he wants to do something so good for not just like the world at large, which he does, but his family. You know, this whole thing, there's a reason why he brings his family along because, you know, he wants to give them this better life. And in turn, by doing that, he's neglecting his youngest son, Will, played by Jack Johnson, who I don't believe has any ties to the musician Jack Johnson. Let's get this out of the way. I'm not saying this movie's perfect. I'm not even saying this movie's like great. I'm just saying like it is not worthy of the ridiculous amount of hate that it gets. And one place that it does kind of falter a little bit or has a little bit of a harder time is with some of the children's performances. And Will, I think Will for the most part is actually pretty good. He's got to toe that line between being like mischievous and like really upset at his dad and kind of feeling neglected without being whiny, which is tough. It's tough. I mean, like, that's kind of what they did with Jake Lloyd in Phantom Menace, where it was like, and actually a lot of things that Jake Lloyd's done. It's tough to write these characters of kids when they're going through these emotional states that in real life we would just kind of roll our eyes at or be like, ugh, this annoying kid. And to really bring something, but I really think he does. And I love the relationship that he has with the robot. I don't even remember what the robot's name was. I think he just calls it Robot. Which is fine. It's such like it's the most basic bitch thing that you can call it, but hey, that's what it is. It's his robot. I then think the other side, if you have like this really great performance by like William Hurt and, you know, Mimi Rogers and Heather Graham, they're great, but they kind of are playing it very straight. They are playing it as a family drama first and kind of this like pulpy sci-fi thriller second, if at all. They're really playing into the realism of like this family trapped in space and how they would deal with it. On the opposite side of that coin is one of my favorite villain performances maybe ever. Ed Greer said this about me, and it's 100% true. He's like, man, you love like the camp in things, even if you don't realize it. I think that's true, because one of my favorite villains of all time is Treat Williams as Xander Drax in The Phantom, and he's just having the time of his life. And I think Gary Oldman as Dr. Smith in this movie is just having the time of his life, and he knows exactly what kind of movie he is in. He is not trying to pull any, you know, Oscar winning punches here. He just wants to twirl his mustache and be dastardly. And I think he is a blast. I love it when, you know, they're exploring the Proteus ship and, you know, he's like the drip, drip, drip of blood. And Matt LeBlanc's just like, you really need to shut up now. I just think that's such a fun dynamic to have him along. And I know that's part of the show. It's you know, kind of like the nefarious doctor is with him the whole time. And he's kind of, you know, the antagonist. But I really love what Gary Oldman did with this. And the spider thing creeped me out. When he turns into a giant spider at the end, or like future him is this big spider, it creeped me out. I remember there was like one of the fast food chains, Burger King or Carl's Jr. They did like the toy tie-ins, and there was you could get Don West with his cool little helmet, and one of them was like a big Dr. Smith as the spider. I was like, who wants this? What kid's like, yeah, I got the spider. Neat. Like, it was the weirdest, maybe one of the weirdest toy, fast food toy tie-ins of all time. Let's talk a little bit too about the production design. Like I mentioned earlier, how I really loved the design of like their fighter ships, which, you know, like I said, look kind of like a little bit like B-wings. With like a gyro kind of cockpit in this bubble. And I really loved the design of all of this. It was the future. And anytime that you do the future in one of these movies, you run the risk of it looking super outdated or kind of like, you know, kitschy, because no one really knows what the future looks like, and they have a tendency to overdo it. But for, you know, this movie is kind of over the top and kitschy, so like it works. I really love the fighters. I really love the design of the Jupiter too, because when it starts, you know, you're in this like classic looking Jupiter ship, like one that looks like the one from the TV show, and you're like, oh, okay, yes, that's, you know, all this technology. Why would you have such a lame looking ship? And then once, you know, the outer shell breaks away, it's the Jupiter 2, and it kind of just looks like a human brain with, you know, jet propulsion, for lack of a better term. It's a very odd, like, design, but I kind of love it. Like, it looks like a human organ that flies in space. I also really like, just whoever did the production design just in general, just knocked it out of the park. The cryo chambers, that's really cool. I'm not gonna say this was the first use of bullet time. It wasn't. It was not. In fact, I don't even think it's like technically bullet time, but when they hit the hyperdrive and everything kind of slows down and they're kind of floating there in the zero gravity, like that whole sequence is so cool. You know, everything about this, I kind of think, you know, right down to like their costumes and just all the weapons. I love kind of the away team, for lack of a better term, like their black kind of industrial costumes. In fact, this is how weird of a kid I was. After I saw Air Force One, I really wanted to play Air Force One, and I just took my Dr. Smith action figure, and then he became the bad guy from Air Force One because he kind of looked like he was in a similar suit, and I appreciated that. Let me be clear. Let's talk about some of the things real quick that don't work in this movie, because like I said, this movie is not perfect. I'm not saying it's a great movie. I'm not saying it's the best. I'm saying I really like it. But there are things that I just think they fall a little short. And I think one of them is Penny, who's played by Lacey Chabert. It's so tough to give like terrible criticism to a child actor at that point in her career, at least. But, you know, she just isn't given the best lines, and she delivers them so bratty. Like, I know she's supposed to be this, you know, very, she's very upset that they're leaving Earth and very teenagery, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work very well. And oof, the CGI pet that she picks up on the Proteus, like Blurp or whatever the hell it's called. I mean, I don't even think that CGI was good at the time that it came out. But it does not age well now. Like, it is bad. It's worse than like The Rock and the Scorpion King, or like the Megazord at the end of the Power Rangers movie. Like, it's not good. And that was kind of one of the first instances that I can remember of like a CGI character being thrown in to sell toys. Obviously they had done it before with Ewoks and all that jazz, but like a full CGI character was definitely a new novel thing. And I don't think the world was ready, and I don't think they were ready. So that didn't work for me. The other thing I'll say too is, you know, you have Mimi Rogers there, you have Heather Graham, and they just don't really get anything to do. They just don't give the women much to do. It's, you know, Major West and William Hurt. They're kind of, you know, John and Don are kind of fighting the whole time about command and what's the best thing to do. And, you know, it's very much kind of, you know, Don West is kind of the Han Solo, where it's, you know, shoot first, ask questions later. And John's, you know, you're putting my family at risk. And that's how the Proteus blows up and they get stuck on the planet. But the meantime, the women are just kind of there to consult with the men. They're there to kind of push them along and push them forward in the narrative. They're just not given really anything to do. And I think, especially at this time where Heather Graham was really coming into her own, you know, she was, you know, just a couple years away from, you know, big breakout roles with Boogie Nights and Austin Powers 2, you know, it was just kind of a waste of those parts. That being said, you also have to remember that in the, you know, in the 90s, especially, like, in these types of movies, like, unfortunately, you know, Danielle Radford and I talked about this in the Wild Wild West episode, like, the women characters were just kind of, you know, they had these quote-unquote focus groups are just like, oh, kids and men don't care about the women characters, just, you know, get them off screen. So it's not like this was the only movie guilty of doing that, but certainly when you watch this movie kind of in a bubble, no pun intended, because that's what the whole third act takes place in, a bubble. But when you watch this movie in kind of a time capsule bubble, it definitely stands out as you have these amazing women actresses, and they're just not being used, at least not used to their full potential. And like I said, I think Mimi Rogers and Heather Graham, I'm singling them out because I think they take it very seriously and they add some gravitas and at least some credibility and legitimacy to this, like, otherwise incredibly far-fetched thing. But they're playing it so straight that, you know, it feels real to them. And that kind of, for me at least, I know doesn't work for most people, but it grounded it in some form of a reality that I could at least understand. A criticism that I see of this movie, you know, even just looking at the Rotten Tomatoes reviews, is that the time travel is clunky. It is full of cliches and full of this and full of that. And I see a lot of people saying that, yeah, if you're 10, you'll love this. If you're 11, I guess you'll like this. And they say it as like it's an insult, but I really don't. I don't think it has to be. I do think that this movie is introducing these concepts of sci-fi early into a lot of kids like me. Like, I think this is a movie that kind of, like, it's almost like a gateway. You know, it's at the age of 10 or 11, like, I was probably, and you guys know, Mr. Scaredy Blanket, I think Alien would have been too intense for me, but you get, like, a taste of that. You get a taste of, you know, you can call it ripoffs of other sci-fi things, but I call it homages to other sci-fi things, with like the spiders and just some of the time travel. And there is kind of like a hint of all these, you know, concepts and character beats and story beats of great sci-fi movies. And they kind of put them out here in this one movie. And I guess you could call that just like a bland ripoff. But I think for me, it kind of like opened my mind to what sci-fi could be that's maybe not just Star Wars or not just Star Trek, you know, not just Klingons or the Empire, not just X-Wings or the Enterprise. Here's something a little bit different. And I really like the time travel aspect. They have Jared Harris, who plays the older version of Will Robinson. And I think it really does hit me every time that he finally gets to see his dad in the past one more time, because the family has all died in this version of the future and all that's left is Spider-Smith. And I really think it works for me. I think it was a cool concept as a kid to find out, like, oh, this bubble that they just walked into is a time machine. And then, of course, you know, them coming out of the planet as it explodes, like, it's all really well done. So I kind of just don't understand 100% where some of the criticisms come from in a movie like this. I get it. It's definitely not, you know, it's not going to be a movie that I think is going to be put on like the all-time best list. But when you're talking about some of the all-time worst list, this movie does show up on it. And I don't think it deserves the hate that it gets. I want to read you one of these these reviews, and it's the new robot is a disappointment. Instead of endearingly low tech, the fire plug of yore that warned Will Robinson, the new machine's all bells and whistles and no fun, kind of like the movie itself. And I do wonder, you know, reading a review like that, how much of that is like bringing expectations for what this Lost in Space movie should have been to this movie. And I think we do that a lot now with movies that are clearly geared towards a younger audience. Because I think for me, like the father-son dynamic of this movie, which ultimately it comes down to, it's presented in a way that's digestible for kids. It kind of plays out as a, you know, I don't want to call it a morality play, but it's things that they can understand on their level. And I still think it's fun. As an adult, I still think this movie is really fun. I think, I think they're all kind of playing to their strengths, but I think, you know, a performance by Gary Oldman as an adult, that's the kind of stuff that will appeal to me more. But as a kid, you get the special effects, you get the, I wasn't a blurp fan or blarp or whatever the hell that thing is, but I was really taken by a lot of the effects. To me as a kid, it stood out, you know, it stood up with, you know, the trench run, was them getting out of the planet before it exploded. Those were two really cool sequences. But I think, you know, just like I said, grazing through some of these reviews, there is kind of this like sacred cow sense of what have you done to this franchise, instead of like, here is just a movie for kids. And there's just like this level of cynicism towards it. Like, oh, they only made it to sell toys. I'm not 100% disagreeing with that, but also to say that that's the only reason why this exists, like, I think that's a bit of a stretch. And like Lost in Space, having seen episodes now, I don't think it really should be put up on like the biggest pedestal. It's not the sacred cow that I think, you know, some of the people in these reviews would make it out to be. And you see this almost any time that a show is adapted to a film, where it's like, oh, this is so much worse than the show. The show, it's like, okay, look, Baywatch the movie is terrible, but to be fair, Baywatch the TV show is terrible. What were you expecting? It's exactly the same thing. So I think this is like a really fun family movie, which is just really hard to find. You know, the violence isn't too violent. It's just scary enough where, you know, it's like the fun scary, but not like, you know, can't sleep at night scary. I think it's like fun escapism for kids, and for adults, I think there is stuff to find in it that you can really like. I really like this movie, obviously, and sometimes, look, you're gonna get some junk food. Like we talk about on SJU all the time, sometimes you gotta eat your movie broccoli, and sometimes you want a little junk food, and I would definitely put this in the junk food category. But I implore you to, if you can't remember this, you know, a lot of times it'd be like, I'll talk to people and be like, man, I like Lost in Space. I'm like, oh, that movie's terrible. I'm like, oh, why do you think it's terrible? I'm like, I don't really remember anything about it, but I just remember it's terrible. It's like, well, give it a second shot. And I'm not saying you're going to love it. And I'm not saying that maybe it still will give you the same feelings you had the first time you saw it, or if you've never seen it and you avoided it. Well, if you've never seen it and you're talking about how terrible it is, then you are a problem, because you shouldn't, don't add to things if you have nothing to add to it. If you haven't seen it, either don't talk about it or go watch it and then complain about it. But I think it's worth watching this kind of now in the context that we have of where we've come with sci-fi, where we've come with special effects. And I think you'll see that, yeah, while some of those don't hold up, the production design holds up, the themes between fathers and sons, and, you know, that connection, that legacy, that wanting to cement your legacy in the future, but not forgetting your past, not keeping your foot, you know, on what you have with you. I think those themes still resonate. I think you're still going to get that amazingly fun performance from Gary Oldman. You might even get a glimpse into an alternate timeline where Matt LeBlanc was actually a really cool leading man. Lost in Space. I know this might be a little bit of a shorter episode just because I don't have someone telling me the whole time why I'm wrong and why you shouldn't like this, but I definitely think you should give this another shot. I think this one is ripe for a reboot, and I know what you're saying. Yes, there was a Netflix show. There was at least one season of it. I don't know if it got renewed for a second season. For me, that's kind of like, I think watching this movie and then watching that show is kind of like the discrepancy of, or at least a good kind of visual aid of like where we are with the content that we watch, where I found it so tedious. I found it so dark, so brooding, so boring. And it didn't really give me the same vibes that either the movie or the TV show is. Like, you know, sometimes things are kind of saccharine and campy and kind of silly. And when you take the dark, gritty approach to them, it doesn't work. And I don't feel like the show works. And I kind of feel like Lost in Space is the same thing that Fantastic Four has, where it's like to do it properly is to not do it the way that I think fans clamor for, which is like the gritty realistic, because you saw what happened when they did Fan4Stick. It's like, all right, you want to see Marvel's first family in a way that you now think a comic book movie should be, and it was terrible. I'll talk more about the 2005 Fantastic Four episode. I'm going to do that actually probably in a week or two. That's coming up real fast. But I think that idea still stands, where I think something like Lost in Space now, like, I think it's time that you can reboot this. You can do another like family friendly version of it, because ultimately it's a story about a family, and we just don't get a lot of those. And if we do, they're kind of, you know, like the This Is Us or something kind of dramatic or a sitcom, but you don't get something cool like Out in Space, and you can play a little bit with kind of the sci-fi elements of a family story. And I think after something like Jumanji came out, it's like, oh man, this is the time is right. I think we're ready for a renaissance of ideas like a Lost in Space. So ultimately, was a Lost in Space a lost cause? I don't think so. I think it's worth a second shot, if anything, just so you can, like I said, revisit the Gary Oldman performance. Just look on screen at the amazing sets, the amazing costumes, everything about that production. Yeah, there's some really crappy CGI, but this was before everything was CGI, and a lot of those sets are practical. The little spiders are kind of, you know, dumb and bad, but everything else are, you know, all the props and everything are just, they're top notch. And I feel like, yes, this movie isn't perfect. This movie isn't even great, but I think it's definitely worth taking a second look with kind of those things in mind. So with that being said, that is this week's episode talking about Lost in Space. You can like and subscribe to this show on, actually, I don't know if you can like, but you could definitely subscribe on iTunes. If you guys could write a review, the more you write and the more 5-star reviews there are, that makes it easier for other people to get the show recommended to them, and definitely want to get the word out on this show. And again, once again, I will be at New York Comic Con on Saturday, October 5th. And I will be at LA Comic Con doing a live recording where we try to figure out how to reboot Batman. That'll be with the boys from the Nerd Goat podcast, Mr. Ed Greer, Ron Swallow, producer Bill. I know a lot of you guys like that show, because when I go on iTunes and I look at my show, I see that most listeners subscribe to that and Casterly Talk. So I definitely know you guys know those Nerd Goat boys. And if you want to see us work together, I know a lot of you like the episodes of Ed and I in the Car, The Commute Killer. So it'll be that same energy where we tackle how to reboot Batman and what we would want to see from a Batman reboot. Also, if you guys are fans of Star Wars, big fans of Star Wars, I'm a big fan of the Force Center podcast over there with Joseph Scrimshaw, Jennifer Landa, and Ken Knapsack. Ken and I sat down and we talked about Star Wars, the special editions. I almost did a whole episode of that for this show. But then, you know, talking about it with Ken, we decided let's do a Force Center episode where we rank the things that we like about the Star Wars Special Edition, because that is how I was introduced to Star Wars. That is where my love of Star Wars comes from, are those 1997 editions, which that is a hot take that I like the special editions, and you'll get to hear all my hot takes on Star Wars Special Editions. That is on Star Wars Ranked on the Force Center podcast. That is coming out real soon. It might be this week. So stay tuned to my Twitter, at Billy A. Patterson on Twitter. Also at Billy A. Patterson on Instagram. And I will keep you guys updated when you can check that out. Thank you guys so much for listening. Still coming up, we got a lot of cool things coming. The Nerd Goat Boys, Ron Swallow, will be on the show. And one of my favorite podcasts that I listen to, Hey Do You Remember, and also Rogues Gallery, I've got the host of those shows, Chris Schrader, who is going to come on real soon talking about Prometheus. Oh yeah, we're going to that. If today was Alien Light, we're going full-blown Alien on the Prometheus episode. So thank you so much for listening, and I will see you guys next time.